Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast presents Midterm Cram. We're rapidly approaching the midterms, and to better understand the state of the race, late-night staffers Sal Gentile and Henry Melcher focus on how Democrats in red states are running their campaigns. Without further ado, let's go to Sal and Henry.
Hey, Sal.
Hey, Henry.
We just had a really great conversation with Claire Malone. She's a senior political writer at 538, and we talked to her about where some of the most competitive races in the country are right now, what's brought us to this point, and then we made her predict with incredible accuracy what's going to happen on November 6th.
Yes.
And she tells us. Yeah, it's amazing. She tells us she broke down every single race.
She is an oracle. Mm-hmm. She literally predicted to a T everything that's going to happen.
She knows if you personally are voting
or
not. Yes. She's made that decision and who you're voting for.
Mm-hmm. It just feels like a good time to get a lay of the land.
There are so many unknowns, and she is very upfront that there are certain trends that have pushed us to this moment to where many of these races are competitive and others aren't. But there are just so many things we do not know, and we can't predict what will actually happen on November
6th. And you get a lot of diverging headlines that are difficult to make sense of, as we'll talk about with her. It's hard to get a gauge on what's happening. In some cases, forecasts are diverging. If you sort of skim 538 or any other polling aggregators, it seems like the Senate is maybe diverging from the House in interesting ways. And so it can kind of feel like it's hard to get a grasp of what is actually happening. And so people are sort of just tuning in now. This is kind of the time of the year where people are starting to now get plugged into what's happening in these races. So it feels like a good time to get a sense of like where things stand. This is one of those elections where you know very specifically in some senses what the consequences are. In this case, it's very clear what we know will happen if Democrats, for example, take control of the House or the Senate or both.
Their
broadcasts get very clear. They've literally made a list of things that they will investigate if they take over House committees that give them subpoena power. It's, I think, eminently clear that if the Republicans maintain control of everything, they will feel like they can do whatever they want with impunity. So we know concretely a few things, which is that if Republicans maintain control of the House and Senate, we almost certainly know that Trump will fire whoever he wants. He'll be empowered to pardon whoever he wants. Like, he'll be able to do that.
So Claire, kind of walk us through where things currently are, and then she will predict what is going to happen when the polls close.
And she's going to tell us who will win the battle of the Swifties versus the alt-right.
Oh, yeah, we get into Taylor Swift right off the top.
Yes.
Very quickly. Here's Claire. Hey, we are here with senior political writer for 538, Claire Malone.
Great to be here.
Thanks so much for being here.
Of course, yeah.
So Henry and I were talking, and we were curious, as you're a writer for 538, how often do you get people in your life asking you very specifically, what's going to happen?
You know, it happens less now. Okay. I think a lot of people have sort of 2016 election night fatigue, but I did get, 2016 election night, I was getting tons of texts from my family and friends. Like, it was to the distracting point. Now people just want to talk about politics with me.
Okay.
So, you know, like, I'll call my parents and they want to talk minutely about like races that are going on, and you know, it starts to like filter into your social life.
So they've learned the correct behavior. Because here's the thing, I will say that I'm not even a journalist. I just write jokes about it. But even I get questions all the time that are like, so what do you think is going to happen about everything? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea, especially after all the times I thought I knew and I was wrong. You're an actual person who like intently studies these things. And you don't have Oracle powers. No. So I feel like, I guess people have learned after the 2016 election to stop asking because it's bad luck or something.
A little bit, yeah. Also, I mean, it's sort of comforting to know that like most of the country doesn't ask at all, right? Like most people are just tuning in and learning like the names of candidates.
Yes,
like,
that's
now
true.
Or in 2 weeks. So yeah. It's kind of like there's definitely a specific slice of person who listens to this podcast, yes. Probably.
Most people will not know who Phil Bredesen is until, like, the day before Election Day.
Or until Taylor Swift posted about
it. Well, that's true. That is an exception, which we'll get
into. Why don't we start with...
You want to start with Taylor Swift?
Well, let's start with Taylor Swift.
Yeah, sure. So a big thing happened in the political world, which is that Taylor Swift endorsed Phil Bredesen.
Yeah. How big of an impact do you think that'll be? I mean, there's apparently like 65,000 new voter registrations because of that post. How does the Taylor Swift endorsement fit into a 538 model? Is there a special like check or something you can add into the filter?
That's a great question. Well, it's funny. So this is the Tennessee Senate race, and this is Congressman Marsha Blackburn. She does not go by Congresswoman because she has said that Congresswoman is not a word.
Huh.
So she is running against Phil Bredesen.
She's the only Congresswoman that says that. I've never heard that.
I believe she is. Yeah. It's like if you're going to have a thing, that's like a spicy one to have. So she's running against the former governor of Tennessee, Phil Bredesen, who is kind of like an old school Southern Democrat. I mean, if like Bill Clinton were... If 1992 Bill Clinton were running in 2018, he might look something like Phil Bredesen.
Right.
I mean, we were kind of paying attention to that race in our office because Tennessee is a red state. So no one really thought it was going to be a close race. It was a close race. And we were paying attention to it. But like, again, slice of the population. And then, a couple days ago, Taylor Swift kind of blew it out of the water by saying, listen, I think Marsha Blackburn is bad for women, bad for minorities, all that stuff. So we were talking about this before we started this podcast, that like a bunch of people registered to vote in Tennessee. I kind of wonder if they'll actually vote, like if there will be a Taylor impact on actual election day. I mean, it says a lot about the power of celebrity. Although, like, you know, Hillary Clinton got endorsed by tons of celebrities. And,
yes.
And that didn't.
Why are you reminding us? Why are you bringing this horrible?
And there were like the
back?
Terrible pundits that were like, did Hillary lose because she was too close to celebrities? And it's like,
I don't want to remember, by the way, how comforted I was by all the celebrities that endorsed Hillary Clinton, because I really did convince myself that that was a thing that would
Jay-Z
help her.
Jay-Z and Beyonce were going to make
it
happen.
Yeah, the concert. And like, I was like, oh man, they're really going to get people to come out and vote. And I don't want to, it's traumatic to remember that I was comforted by that falsely.
So we're talking about Tennessee, and there's a chance a Democrat could win in Tennessee. You had this great pairing of stories in 538. One, a Democrat could win in Tennessee. And two, a Democrat could lose in New Jersey.
Yeah.
How did we get to that point?
Yeah. That's a great question. I guess I would say incumbency can either be good or really bad, which is to say Phil Bredesen is a kind of quasi-incumbent because he used to be a governor of the state. He brought a sports team in, which... Americans really like when he was the mayor of Nashville.
There's two things.
Yeah.
Pop music and sports.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
It's really true though.
Yeah.
You know, like Popovich. That's why people want him to run for president, right?
Oh my God, that'd be great.
So Phil Bredesen was kind
of a yell at people.
He's kind of a popular former governor. He's really not trying to rock the boat. He's trying to distance himself from Chuck Schumer. He said he wouldn't vote for Chuck Schumer in the caucus elections of the Senate. So you've got someone like that who's like a popular, we remember that guy in like the halcyon days of, what's the name of the team that he, the Tennessee Titans. I think that's it. And then in New Jersey, you've got Bob Menendez, who is suffering the bad effects of incumbency, which is that, you know, he had a mistrial for corruption charges, but it doesn't look good. The number of things that he was sort of accused of doing, you know, taking essentially bribes from this doctor. Right. And then just the Democrats kept on supporting him in the primary. They didn't choose to pick a new person. I mean, Menendez has been in there a while. You could have argued as a Democrat, listen, let's get some fresh blood. This is a safely blue state. So Menendez won his last election by 19 points. Now, polling's gotten slightly better for him since I wrote the piece about New Jersey. But he's still only showing, I think now, maybe up by like around low double digits or high single digits in the polls, which if you think about it is like, you know, we live in a kind of uncertain world and sometimes polls can be slippery. And so Menendez and
what?
Is
no polls are always correct. They've always proven correct. I don't know what you're talking about.
But it really does come back to that sort of like trite but true thing of like all politics is local, and people in New Jersey, even if you're a Democrat, he has really bad favorability ratings with all people in the state pretty much. So that's how New Jersey could potentially go blue. But those states, I should note, are kind of, I don't want to make any promises because I think this is airing in a few
days. No, make a prediction. Make a prediction.
Yeah, but I think you're seeing right now, kind of in a lot of states on the Senate map, partisanship kicking in. So if you're a red state like Tennessee is, you're probably starting to tune in and say, like, I don't know, Marsha Blackburn, she's fine. She's a Republican. I vote Republican. And if you're a Democrat, maybe you read my piece and said, like, you know, I got to vote for Menendez, even though I hate him. Right. That's how we win.
Well, another big piece of this partisan fight was Kavanaugh's appointment to the Supreme Court. I couldn't quite parse the polling on this.
Sure.
Some headlines were saying the Kavanaugh confirmation will help Democrats. Some were saying it will help Republicans. How do you kind of see it?
I do think Kavanaugh has become a thing in the sense of it's just become one of those big partisan dividing issues. And I think that's an astute observation that people keep on, like, there's not really any clarity in headlines about who this helps and who this hurts. What I will say is a lot of people have been saying, so here's the two sort of mainstream takes, right? One is that Kavanaugh's nomination is really good for the Republican Senate map because Republicans already had, they have a lot of incumbents in there, strong incumbents, and the Democrats are kind of fighting in red states. So someone like Heidi Heitkamp, who voted against Kavanaugh, has really seen an effect in her polling numbers lately. And so people are saying, okay, that's how Republicans win the Senate. They force red state Democrats into these uncomfortable positions. We don't know, though, if those polling changes are because, as I said before, partisan is kicking in because it's October and people are paying attention, or because it's the Kavanaugh vote. Because we have seen in a lot of red states like Indiana and Missouri, the race is getting tighter. But then you've also seen places like Florida, which is kind of purple. Bill Nelson, the Democrat, has actually been nudging up in the polls a little bit. In Ohio, which obviously went for Trump, Sherrod Brown has been nudging up in the polls.
He's up by like 16 or something.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm a native Ohioan. So okay. I think Sherrod Brown is actually like a really good fit for the age because he's always been this anti-free trade union guy. He's very Ohio. He's got the great like gravelly voice. He wears sneakers with his suits. Like he's kind of like, I think he's a good fit for the state and he has the incumbency advantage. And so I think that's like its own kind of little quirk of the stuff.
See, I'm from New Jersey, and we never get native New Jersey politicians acting in New Jersey. Like, they are super corrupt in the typically New Jersey way, but nobody's ever wearing, like, a velour jumpsuit and saying, like, hey, hanging out on the corner and saying, hey, get the hell out of here. Forget about it. And like, we never get that. Ohio gets the sneakers and the gravelly
Chris
voice.
Christie was pretty, like,
pretty close.
He was pretty New Jersey.
Oh, I hate that Chris Christie is associated with New Jersey.
That,
as a New Jerseyan, I despise that people think of him as typically New Jersey.
That photo of him on the beach from the helicopter where he's staring up on that completely empty beach when he closed all the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That
in
was
the beach,
like,
in the chair,
that's
but,
amazing.
But yes, it is incredible. But I would just like to say that New Jerseyans really cherish their beaches and they think that he's a giant asshole for taking up an entire beach by himself. And what is typically New Jersey is the amount of times that people would just yell at him in public. Like that is very typically New Jersey. On election day, he got into this. It was one of the best clips on his way out. He was like doing a press scrum with a couple reporters and like he was at the point in his career where like nobody cared about him anymore and he was like had become irrelevant. And he just got into like a really nasty back and forth with some random woman over some local zoning issue in a new parking lot in New Jersey, just yelling at him. And it was just very satisfying how sad it was. And also it's very satisfying to continue to see that people will just yell at him on the boardwalk wherever he goes.
Regional stereotypes are true, which is the thing I learned in college when I went to college on the East Coast.
The lesson is all stereotypes are true. Yeah.
Okay, I want to ask you about the top-level Trump stories and how they're affecting some of these midterm races, because at this show, we cover all the crazy Trump does all the time. I mean, there's so many scandals, it's hard to keep track of any one of them. Is that affecting voters? I assume it's motivating Democrats, but is it changing minds?
I think the fact that Trump does a lot of crazy, abnormal things has become normal for a lot of people. So it does take an event like, I would say Kavanaugh is kind of the Access Hollywood of the 2018 midterms in the sense that it was an event that cracked the partisan whip, but also potentially alienated some people. So I think we saw in 2016, college-educated white women were traditionally a Republican voting constituency who have slowly been leaving the GOP. And I think you see in poll numbers surrounding the Kavanaugh event, those women and independents are also turned off by that nomination battle. So you see some people in the middle kind of trying to figure out where they allied. But I think it takes now sort of big roiling controversies outside the sort of palace intrigue of Trump world, which is obviously still, it's still important because, you know, if you're paying attention to politics on the top level, like, for instance, how will the White House react to potentially sanctions going on Saudi Arabia because of the alleged murder of a journalist, right? Like, that stuff is important, how Trump reacts to that and what his relationships are with Saudi Arabia and why Jared Kushner is on phone calls when he doesn't have security clearance. Those things are important. But do they trickle down to people who are busy and either read the newspaper in the morning or watch the news at night? What's trickling down to those people who are the voters? And I think it's things like the Kavanaugh hearing, yeah, which are month-long stories, in this case, like 2-month-long stories, that really form opinions and fall into not just political lines, but cultural lines in America and how we think about sex. And so a long-winded answer to say, like, a lot of the Trump palace intrigue stuff, I think, doesn't necessarily move the needle anymore with the electorate.
Well, there's just degree to which, like, we're kind of at saturation for, like, who's going to dislike Trump and who's going to like Trump, right? I mean, like, he's already, like, historically unpopular, you know, and it just seems like he's hit his floor. Like, there's never going to be a world
built in.
Yeah. You know more about this than I do, but, like, it just kind of seems like Trump's never going to go below whatever, like, 36.
And if he does, that would indicate, like, let's look back to, like, let's say Nixon and his impeachment. Like, if Trump falls below a certain number, then you might say, well, what does that mean as far as people in his base who used to support him would no longer support him? That would be a change, right? If things ever sort of progress to that level. But I do think you're right in a sense of, like, American partisanship is super built in now. And he can act with relative political impunity on a lot of things.
Right. Again, from his base. But, like, he is very unpopular. It's just the case that we have a system that allows, like, you know, a minority faction to rule. So, like, right, you know,
the Electoral College kids.
Yes, that's right. I feel like that's one of the reasons people are just, like, aching to vote. Why there's, like, a lot of, like, again, we'll see if this actually translates in, but just like so much pent up energy. People just feel like a lot of our institutions are lacking democratic legitimacy.
Well, let me push back on that one, which I think has to do, I've been thinking about this with, you know, Billy Eichner has this big voter registration thing, a lot of celebrities, Taylor Swift. A couple days ago, you saw lots of people on Instagram and Twitter saying register to vote, who are celebrities. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see if that has an effect. I do think within that, like, the celebrity community, there is, like, virtue signaling going on, right, where they say, like, register to vote. I'm, like, hip to it, right? I do wonder who those people are reaching, which is to say, we already know that, say, white women, college-educated white women, are really activated right now. And they're demographically, there's actually, like, a political science study done by Theda Skocpol, who studied the Tea Party in 2010. She studied the Indivisible Movement and who's starting those groups. It's usually middle-aged white women, college-educated white women. Those people are really activated to vote. Well, they always are, right? So I'm interested to see if groups in, say, let's look at Georgia, where Stacey Abrams is a black candidate for governor running against an extremely right-wing white guy. Who comes out to vote for Stacey Abrams? Did Taylor Swift or Billy Eichner reach the people that Stacey Abrams needs to win? Maybe, but I don't know. Mm. So I think there's definitely pent-up energy in a lot of areas. We're in New York. It's certainly in New York, right? And, you know, Hillary Clinton won by 3 million votes. But as we all know by now, she ran up the margins in certain states and in certain places. And while that definitely helps in, you know, House districts in California and Texas, places that weren't in play before, I do continue to wonder, like, who is actually going to be activated on November 6th? And I don't know the answer. It's you know, I'm not trying to be, like, a smarmy, like, well, actually. It's actually, yeah. I don't
it's
know.
It's fine not to, like, nobody knows the answers. Like, this comes back to my original question. It's like, don't ask people what's going to happen because nobody knows.
This is actually an existential podcast.
Yes, that's right. Knowing the limits of human understanding is a virtue. Right. We should all accept that, yes.
I do want to ask this question, though, about voter registration. We talked about Stacey Abrams, and what she's saying is, she was on our show talking about this, and she's been talking about this everywhere, that, like, she's not trying to flip Trump voters. Right. She's trying to register a ton of voters and trying to bring out new voters who don't typically vote, which is what you were just talking about.
Yeah.
Do you kind of agree with the basic philosophy that it is better worth candidate time to register voters and motivate people to vote than it is to flip voters who may or may not be in your typical coalition?
It's an interesting theory. And I would say we don't know yet if that's a thing in this political age that will work. And I'll give you two examples. One of which is Trump won by turning out people who polls missed, which is that polls try to poll what we call a likely universe of voters, people who are registered to vote, people who have been on the voter rolls for a long time. What Trump did with his media reach was he could turn out people who hadn't been registered to vote, who said for a couple of cycles, who the polls missed, who said, I'm going to vote for this guy. I'm going to go to the polls and vote for him. Okay, that's great. So that's the Republican view of it, where you can reach people who aren't in the system. The other example I would say, which is closer to Stacey Abrams' goal, is Doug Jones in Alabama. Okay, so obviously Doug Jones ran against Roy Moore, who was an accused pedophile. So that helps if you're in a race against him. But Doug Jones is a middle-aged white man, centrist Democrat, who also needed to prove to the very large black population in Alabama that he could actually win and that he needed to court his votes. And so you did see really high levels of black turnout in that Senate race, which was, for a special election, really unique. I think Stacey Abrams isn't crazy for thinking, listen, I'm a black gubernatorial candidate. These people might be really excited about me. I'm going to tell them I have the chance to win. Look at this crazy guy who I'm running against. You should really vote for me. Like, I'm not just a protest vote. I could actually win. But I will say that there is a steep barrier to entry in that, which is you're doing a lot of legwork registering people, and you also have to hope that they'll turn out. I think things like Souls to the Polls, where like churches in black communities will often drive people on election day, provide transportation, that helps. But it is a bit more of a lift. But I'm really interested to see if it works, because yeah. I do think we have two recent examples that you can kind of look to and say, well, that worked that time. Extenuating circumstances in both in some ways, but
yeah,
it's still interesting.
I do want to ask this. Do you think there's any anecdotal sense yet of the fact that the consequences of this election have sunk in? Because both sides are trying to make it as clear as possible in these specific ways, not just the general, like, this is an important election. But, like, you have Trump telling his base, like, if Democrats win, they will try to impeach me. Like, they've decided that that's, like, a strategy that they can use to try to yeah. motivate as many people as they can. You have Democrats talking about if Republicans maintain control of both the House and the Senate, then Trump can do whatever he wants with impunity. He can fire and pardon whoever he wants, which I think is probably the case. Like, if Republicans can maintain control of the House and the Senate, mm-hmm. that's a pretty clear signal to Republicans that they can do whatever they want. He yeah. can fire Mueller, he can pardon whoever he wants. Are those consequences, do you think there's any anecdotal sense that that's sinking into people and that it's impacting voter behavior at all?
Sure. I mean, midterm elections are typically a referendum on the party in power, or the president in power. So the Republicans are in power. And I think you're seeing an interesting probable outcome, which reflects the split of the country. And you could argue the particular numerical split of the country, which is that Democrats are likely to win the House and Republicans are likely to win the Senate, which, and obviously, as we all learn in civics class, you know, the Senate only has 100 people, right? It is meant to give power to those areas that are geographically smaller and population-wise smaller. And now in 2018, those places tend to be more conservative. So I think that's an interesting split in and of itself. But yes, I do think people see this election in some way as a referendum on Trump, and that either means we got to keep this guy in power or we've got to put systems in place to take this guy out of power. And I think that is very much on people's mind when right. they vote.
Just to your point about people thinking about Trump in the midterms, it is amazing that Trump is showing up in all these states to rally for a Republican candidate and cannot help himself and just ends up talking about himself the entire
time.
Oh,
yeah. He's done it.
You can't help but nationalize the race and make the race about Trump yeah. when Trump shows up to support you and just talks.
And it gives you such a sense of how different he is politically from the people he's trying to help.
Yeah.
Because he'll go there and he'll do his usual show, which his base loves. And then, like, the candidate that he's campaigning for will get up there and it'll just be like this, like, who was the guy in Pennsylvania? What was the special election running against Connor Lamb, the guy? What was the Republican's name? I can't remember. But that guy like, tried so hard to, like, communicate to the base, communicate to the audience, like, I'm just like Donald Trump, and, like, yeah. I am a Trump guy, like, I'm an independent businessman. But Trump would get up there and he would be his usual stuff. He'd tell stories and do impressions of people and whatever the hell he does. And then this guy get up there for 20 seconds, he's like screaming, like, yeah. in this shrill way, like, hey, I'm Donald Trump. Like, he, like,
we just yeah. saw the real guy.
Yeah, yeah, let's close the deal. I remember that was one of the lines that he used because he was trying to make
build
it seem
the
like
wall
he,
becomes close
yeah,
the deal.
Yeah,
he was trying all work. Yeah, not every chant is.
Yes. And it just shows the Trump effect does not translate to the candidates that he's often that he's trying to campaign
but
for.
Just pure association. I mean, there's a reason why people have pictures of politicians on the wall, or, you know, have commercials of them standing next to Trump on the podium. They just want that shot for the commercial. And once the base knows that Trump supports them, in some ways, it's not a stupid strategy where they're just like, yeah, I'll vote for the guy who I don't really know much about, but Trump likes him. Right. I mean, it's not crazy.
Well, you're right, too, because he'll say something crazy and then it's the headline for the day. And then 3 days later, you forget what he even said at the rally. But you're right. The photo. You can get the photo in an ad. That's all that matters. That's interesting. Yeah.
Can I ask one last question? You talked about polarization. Is there any sense now of whether George Washington is a polarized figure in polling? Like, do Republicans now dislike George Washington after Trump said that George Washington was a shady dude?
Because he owned slaves. Was that the thing?
No, it wasn't even that. It was just that he said something about, like, in the context of the Kavanaugh thing, he said...
If we had George Washington here,
Democrats would vote against him. And then he said, and I think he had some shady stuff in his past. He just insinuated that something weird that we don't know about George Washington.
He probably still thinks George Washington is alive.
Yeah, probably.
He probably thinks George Washington is like a state senator Nebraska or something.
Yeah, he's hearing more and more of the incredible work he's doing. Yeah. But he said something like, yeah, and I think didn't he have some shady stuff in his past? He was like asking the reporters. He was like
Stephen Miller, check on that.
It's not clear if he was forgetting that George Washington owned slaves and thought just like that was in his head as something bad, or if he thought of something else that we don't know about. It's not clear what he was saying, but considering that like Putin is now like whatever Trump signals to the base, like I am just curious if Republicans hate George
what's your polling showing on
what's your polling showing? Have you
That's
guys polled
we
George
should
Washington?
Poll we should poll
if
the
you put
founding
that
fathers.
With the Taylor Swift, I feel like we're gonna get some really interesting 538 data.
I'm curious actually who the most popular founding father would be in 2018.
Oh, yeah.
I'm guessing it would be Washington.
Well, who knows now?
Democrats would face an interesting choice with Alexander Hamilton, given their love of the musical and potential dislike of
Oh, man. Well, you have to find a way to work all of this into the 538 model.
This is a good think piece.
Trump coming out against George Washington.
Well, we will let you go put all these things into the 538 model. We are very excited to see what the data comes back with.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here. This is really interesting.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We really appreciate your time. And good luck with the 20-some remaining days before the midterms.
Thanks. You too.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the new kids and family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.